And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
Let's do this thing indeed. Welcome back to Chatter on Books, the only podcast on books that you need to listen to, because it's not really about books. We talk about everything under the sun.
Exactly, everything but books.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always a lot of alcohol involved. Which
I want a t-shirt for Chatter on Books, and it's just going to be a picture of Tony and say, can I go now?
Can I go now?
It's so Tony.
That could apply for a lot of things with Tony. My name is Mark Stern. Those are the dulcet tones of Tori Clark. And look at this.
David Aldridge.
Coming in.
What?
From
David?
Laurel. From Where? Laurel MD.
Congratulations, you made it. The David Aldridge fan club is out here in the restaurant, by the way.
All eight of them?
Five.
Hello.
Five.
What are you doing here? Hi.
It's good to see you, man.
Carol's here. We're very happy to have Carol here. Evidently, your trivia team is here.
My trivia team is here?
Oh, that's right. Is it
Do I have a trivia team?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The David Aldridge experience?
I wasn't aware I had one. Thank you.
And we have a new guest.
Really must come. Oh, see, now they're screaming things.
Right.
Obscenity soon to follow.
The price of fandom.
It's going to be a very short show tonight.
Yes, Tori, would you like to introduce our guest panelist tonight?
We have with us in the chick seat, we're allowed to say that on a podcast, right?
Absolutely.
In the chick seat, Jeannie McManus is on her way to San Francisco for a nice family Thanksgiving, and we have with us Lori, for those of us who knew her back when, Lorraine Bowles, who, in addition to being my dearest friend of all time, is the head of all things important external at GW, correct?
Hello.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And a legend in her own time and mind as well. We're thrilled to have her. And David and Mark, you both know her,
yes.
But you last saw her as Joseph at the live nativity scene.
That's
I thought
correct.
You were the Virgin Mary.
I was. I couldn't fit into the costume, so I wore Joseph.
That was a failure with the costume, by the way, because who would have a skinny Virgin Mary
Susan
costume?
Susan Brophy.
Yeah.
She wore the
you
Virgin
know what?
Mary.
Everybody that left that party that night said, I don't know who was Joseph, but they knocked it out of the park.
Nailed
exactly.
It.
Nailed it.
Crushed it.
Nailed it.
I was cleaning out the basement
so
the other day, and I found this kind of misshapen garbage bag. I'm like, oh, my God, what is this? And I start to open it, and I pulled out the St. Joseph collar. Yeah, no camel outfit.
No camel food?
No camel food.
Camel leavings.
But we had some halos and, serapis.
By the way, not to get totally sidetracked, but I will because that's the nature of this show. What is the plan at the household for this holiday
Nothing.
Party?
Nothing. You can't top that. You can't repeat it every year.
So you're not doing anything
We might
this
do
year?
Anniversary. We might do anniversary live nativity scenes, try to bring them back, that kind of thing. No, what we're working on, and I couldn't get it done for this year, but we're working on for maybe next spring, is the Tejo game, the Colombia's national pastime, which is cornhole.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's called Tejo. Brian, is it T-E-J-O? Tejo? T-E-J-O. Colombia's national pastime, and it's essentially cornhole with gunpowder.
Love
so
it.
So you're throwing explosives.
Love
yeah,
it.
Exactly. And we're going to have Doug Gansler there who will get us out of any legal trouble.
Love
like
is,
he did at our anniversary
I love
party.
This.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe
okay.
You could throw it at a couple of deer that come by.
I walked by.
That would be a public service.
I was coming home from the gym and I walked on the sidewalk. There was a deer not 1 foot from me, eating grass by this on the sidewalk in Glover Park. And he looks up at me like, "You got a problem?
You got problems?
Hey, I'm just sitting there. I'm just eating here. All right, I'm a deer.
Rats on long legs is what
but
they are.
But they look cute.
No. Done a 180 on deer.
Are you on the other side now?
The wife convinced me because I used to be a Bambi. Used to be a Bambi
right,
guy.
Bambi, come on!
But then once they ate everything in your yard,
exactly. She
right?
said they're disgusting animals. And she killed them all.
I had a guy tell me very seriously.
Love my wife. Said you have kind of a dark side, don't you?
Kind of like her a little bit more now myself. That's awesome.
I was talking to a landscape guy recently, just a wonderful, wonderful guy, and I was telling him that the deer had come into our yard, which, as you guys know, is fenced in, a big portion. And they had jumped in over a pretty high fence, and they would eat everything, and they came up on the back porch. And he says, that's a really bad sign. I said, no kidding. He goes, no, that's a really bad sign, because they feel around here, they feel as though they can go wherever
exactly.
they want, whenever
There's
they
no
want.
Fear.
They don't have to jump into yards. He goes, that's a bad sign that they're coming up on your back porch.
They can operate the push starter in a car. We're all doomed.
Done.
If they
Done.
If you start hearing the door handle jiggling... It's a bad sign. It's a real bad sign for you.
Candygram. Candy Graham. No, I'm just a land shark lady.
All right, we have a little housekeeping before we get into the best and worst of the bestsellers. And the one is that the work in progress Chatter on Books website is up. It's live, chatteronbooks.com.
I love this.
Go there. I think there's a whole subscribe thing.
I thought we were doing chatter.edu. We weren't going to do that?
Yeah, I think that would be a problem.
I think that'd be great.
I don't think that's going to happen. So check by how this is going so far.
Right. Check it out. Follow us on Twitter, which is DC Books. Chatter, which is not as good as Chatter on Books, but somebody has that, but we'll wipe them out soon.
Yeah,
so now we're DC
that.
Books Chatter.
Jen Babish, who's here tonight, sent me a text about that.
Yeah.
So
we tried.
We got to find somebody. And
months ago, we tried.
Yes.
And then the second thing is General Manager Ron couldn't be here tonight.
Uh-oh.
He set something up for us tonight, which is the wine of the evening. And the wine of the evening here at Chatter, which is on the corner of Jennifer and Wisconsin Streets Northwest, is Upshot. Lori and I are drinking it. It is, David, what would you like to drink, honey?
Oh, yeah. Can we get a drink for Mr. Aldridge?
Irish coffee?
Ooh, that sounds good.
Doesn't it? It's getting a little rainy out there. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we
get
an Irish coffee?
It's just a little chilly, a little on chill side.
Hey, Brian.
It's 52 degrees out.
We'll take an Irish coffee up here for Mr. Aldridge.
It's chilly for me.
Okay. It's going to get chilly.
Brian's on it.
I have to, it's better than having a glass of wine because I have to go downtown a little bit. Got a little dinner.
What makes an Irish coffee better than a glass of wine?
The coffee.
Oh, okay. Right. So you'll be in a wake drunk.
I'll be alert as I plow into
cars. Show up the dinner.
Cars and chains.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
It's good to see you.
Say hello to the bad guy.
Okay, Ron gave me notes, and I promised I would read these notes, but hopefully we'll have Ron here or other people to talk about these wines. But it's called Upshot. It's a red blend from Sonoma County, California.
Like it.
It has 5 grape varieties. That seems like a lot. It seems crowded. But Zinfandel, Merlot, Malbert, Petit Verdot, I think I pronounced that correctly, and Riesling. It was barrel-aged for 18 months. The grapes were harvested. Mark, we were talking earlier. I think we need Chatter on Wine.
Chatter on Wine.
How great
there
would
you
that
go.
Be? Mark doesn't need to sleep. The grapes were harvested between August 24th of 2015 and October 7th. It was released in July 1st. It's produced by Justin Seidenfeld, who's the winemaker, and the Rodney Strong Vineyards. So then I thought, well, what's with the Rodney Strong Vineyards? That's an interesting name. I looked that up, and I believe anything that I Google.
Yeah. Right. Well,
so
sure.
Listen to this. This is really giving weight to Chatter on Wine. The Rodney Strong Vineyard, the story began 55 years ago. A celebrated American dancer named Rod Strong settled in Sonoma County to pursue his second lifelong creative passion, which was winemaking. So
I think that's a pretty famous vineyard.
Is it?
Yeah.
Brian?
Do we know what kind of dancing Mr. Strong did?
Is the Rodney Strong Vineyard a famous
Flash
vineyard?
Flash dancing mostly.
Yeah, exactly.
He says, sure.
Sitting in a chair when water would get dumped on you.
Yeah.
I think that's
I think there's a segue
such
going
a great
on here.
Pittsburgh movie.
That
My
is a
sister,
Pittsburgh movie, isn't
you
it?
You know the guy who was in that movie?
Because every
you know, the love interest?
Dancer,
right? Yeah. Shows up in lots of different things, like Law and Order.
Right.
Right?
Oh, God.
One of my sisters dated
Thank
him.
You. Thank you.
Really?
Yeah, but then who didn't my sisters date? So
what?
That's, by the way, that's another podcast. Tori's Sisters.
Tori's Sisters.
Chatter on Tori's Sister.
I really think this should be Segway on Chatter.
Segway on Chatter.
Okay,
segue to an actual segue.
Segway to the best and worst.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to figure out different things to keep this best and worst thing going over the weeks. Because sometimes things don't change so much on the national bestseller
they
list.
They don't change.
Right? They don't change much. But there were some pretty interesting changes this time around. So we're going to do... David, can we do Alex Smith for just 10 seconds, though? Talk about having nothing to be thankful for.
Oh, he has plenty to be thankful for. About
what?
$55 million guarantee.
Is he going to get paid everything no matter what?
He gets paid $55
million. Okay,
that was the guaranteed
That's
portion.
The guarantee?
Yeah, because his
no
contract's
matter,
like $89 million, right?
Well, it's $71 million, so $55 million of that is guaranteed.
Do you think he plays again at 34?
I don't know. From listening, I was not at Redskin Park today, from listening to what Jay Gruden had to say, he said it was a pretty serious fracture, which
Sounded
does
like
not
it.
Sound good.
Now, yeah.
He did say there was no ligament damage, which is good, but I do recall Joe Theismann was supposed to be back the following
right.
season. He never
Never made
again.
It back.
He
and
never
how,
played again.
How
yeah.
unbelievable that it was 30 years
same
to
day.
The day.
Same day.
Yeah. Same score.
Yeah.
That's so weird. That is so weird.
And he was at the game.
And he was at the game.
Yeah.
So for all you potential Redskin quarterbacks listening to this show, never, ever, ever play on November 18th.
Yes, don't do it.
Right. Mark Sanchez, you've been warned.
Exactly. Don't do it. So I don't know. I don't know what his future holds, but he's fine. he'll be fine financially. But he's a competitive guy, and he really wants to come back and play. I don't know how serious the break is, but 34-year-old quarterbacks who break their legs in multiple places.
It looked kind of flopsy. Yeah.
It wasn't good.
It was one of those ones, once you watch the replay, you're like, I didn't need to see that.
Yeah. Everybody
does.
In the press box, grizzled veterans, people who've been covering football forever, and everybody just went, oh.
Right.
Because you know how bad that
was. A wonderful moment when both teams came out in the field.
Yeah.
When they were taking him off on the card. Yeah. Wonderful moment.
It reminds you of when LT, who sacked Theismann to break the first, he was the first guy up.
Screaming,
get over here. With the cart, they know.
Oh, that's right.
They know.
And there's always in sports like football and boxing. And I remember, I think it was Mike Tyson. It might have been Mike Tyson's trainer saying, people who don't do this don't understand. You can die doing this.
Right.
You have to play with abandon.
People who do this understand the sacrifices physically, emotionally. They know what they're getting into. Especially nowadays, they know what the future may likely hold for them if they play this sport.
Right.
So anybody who's on that field gets respect.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. If he writes a book, we'll have him on for sure.
Alex Smith or David?
Yeah, Alex Smith. Oh, David and I have to talk about that because he has to write a book.
Yes, you do.
I'm writing. I have lots of ideas.
Okay, well, I can help.
I like that.
Very few of which are in sports.
But we have to do this because as soon as Donna gets here, we got a book on Donna. Look at the New York Times list. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in what's going up, what's going down, these kinds of things. Six books are going down, and thank goodness the Nicholas Sparks book. Oh my God! Thank God that one's finally going down. The Stephen King book. I had not looked at this before, and I should have. Because Elevation, because that one also was going down, but I never looked at it before. And here's the description. A man who is losing weight without getting thinner, just stop there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forms an unlikely alliance with his neighbors who are dealing with prejudices. Is it prejudices against fat people?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. But on this fiction list, because Lori, you're the person who reads more fiction than any of the four of us. Have you read any of these?
Yes.
Which ones?
So I've read Educated. Oh, wait, Fiction.
Fiction. Sorry, I'm on Fiction. I'm sorry.
Hold on. You know, I'm not reading a lot of fiction because...
Page 5 in your syllabus?
That's right.
I'm in school.
Hmm?
No, and I have to tell you, this is not unusual. I read very little on the New York Times fiction bestseller list.
Mm-hmm.
Very little. I mean, I read a lot of fiction, but it's usually not this stuff.
Who gives you your choices? Your daughter, Ruby?
So my daughter, Ruby, who works at an independent bookstore in New York City.
Cool.
She's made me a much better reader. So, and if you want to know what would be on my list, and this might be a little dated because, as Tori knows, I'm in school, so I don't really read when I'm in my work. But Asymmetry by Lisa Halliday. Have you heard of that?
Never.
Oh, it's really good. Well, I really liked it.
Chick book.
Kind of. If you read it, the scuttlebutt is that it's about her relationship with Philip Roth.
Okay.
So, but it's almost like two completely separate books when you're reading it, and so the connection is something sometimes hard to figure out.
Uh-huh.
Ruby Smith helped me with that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Reservoir 13, John McGregor, about a child, a person who goes missing. It's 13 chapters. Each chapter has something to do with the story. Excellent.
Okay.
Upstate by James Wood. And
it's really too bad Michael Kornheiser isn't here because he probably knows all these.
Does he?
Yeah.
So the one I have.
The smart guy.
So there's two more. One I haven't read yet. Well, that's not fiction. It's not fiction. But the other fiction one I really loved was Fresh Complaint, which is Jeffrey, and I'm not going to know how to pronounce this. Eugenie's short stories.
Oh, it's like that daughter of Prince Andrew. Eugenia.
Yeah, Eugenides.
Yeah.
Ruby's going to kill me. But, so those are the ones. I haven't read any of the ones on this list.
Yeah. Okay.
Didn't Stephen King do a short story called Thinner?
Yeah, there was a short story called Thinner by the guy who
you think lost this is just derivative?
Amazing lost weight and got too thin, right?
Pissed off a gypsy.
Yeah.
And the gypsy put a curse on him.
Right.
Because he was a big fat guy.
Yeah.
And then, like, all of a sudden, couldn't stop losing weight, so they needed to find her and get their curse removed or something like that. But, yeah, so.
This is his oeuvre.
Yes.
It seems like going back to this.
It is. Yeah, I wonder if the publisher was like, hey, Stevie, I think we've mined this field before, you know?
I got more.
Okay.
There's still more to tell about this.
On nonfiction, again, we're still on the New York Times list here. Ship of Fools, Mark's Buddy Tucker.
That's right.
Going up, baby.
Yeah, it's up to three now, isn't
it? Have you read it?
I have not, but I have not had a chance to.
Have you read about it?
I have not, because I don't want to read about it, because I'm sure everyone hates him. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of vitriol.
You're
out
a
there.
Good friend.
Yeah, so no, I have not read
I
it
respect
yet.
Your friendship,
Lori's waving
sir.
Paper in the air. Where's
I
Becoming?
Again, not everybody has to like him. Yeah.
Well,
Michelle Obama.
The Obama book. Has it been out long enough?
Because it's only been out a few days, but it'll definitely be out there.
I'm sure it'll be
number
one.
It's
going
to burn this
soon.
Baby up.
But you know what? I was in Politics and Prose yesterday?
Yesterday,
I think it was. No, it's there, but it wasn't as though people were lining up in droves. Maybe because it's so people pre-ordered, all of these things.
Ruby
I'm sure.
told me it was in her bookstore in New York, it was flying off the shelves.
Is my pal Allison still there at Politics and Prose?
Yes, she is, as a matter of fact. She's going to help when you write your book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's going to absolutely help.
We worked together at the Post in sports. She covered tennis.
And I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
I was unaware of that.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
She was a very good tennis writer for a while, and then she decided she had done enough slumming in sports.
She wanted a real job. David, Kobe Bryant's book is going down on the list, I'm afraid to say. Doesn't surprise you?
It doesn't have any impact on my life whatsoever. So.
The Mamba mentality. Is my future future trophy husbands, Colin Kaepernick, is he going to write a book? I'm amazed he hasn't.
He's been offered by several people, some people I know.
We can help.
But I don't think he wants to write it right now.
Because he thinks the story isn't done yet?
I think he thinks the story is not done yet. And that doesn't mean he's going to play again. It means that his lawsuit could get dismissed or not dismissed. I see Donna Brazile's tapping.
Donna Brazile, come on in, honey.
Is it closed?
It's closed. Yeah,
it's closed. Hold on one second. We're coming.
Lori's going to let her in.
So I doubt that. My guess is that he is waiting to see how this gets resolved.
Yeah.
You know,
does it ever get resolved?
That is a book I would like to read.
Me too.
It'll be resolved legally at some point, you know. One way or the other.
We're going to shift
everybody
one down.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're going to put Donna at
yes,
the head of the table.
Down two, then left.
Come down.
Yes.
Come down. I'm going to take my coffee and my phone, and I'm going to go to another place.
Because that's what we do here. Waving at you?
Nobody saw.
There are crazy people out there all the time, Donna. We don't pay any attention to them. What can we get you to drink? Okay, hold on one second.
I've heard something about a red wine here that might be pretty good.
Yeah, we have a red wine special.
Cabernet. I saw it.
Well, Carol's going to get you the wine of the evening, which is called Upshot.
Did you get something to drink? Are you good?
Good to see you too, sister.
Thanks for being here.
Good to see you.
She's fabulous.
These are yours. Sorry.
There you go.
I don't have any cooties whatsoever. I do. I love you back. To the moon and back, as we like to say.
Who doesn't love you, Donna?
Well, let me ask y'all a question. Did y'all watch those Saints yesterday?
Yes. I watched some of it.
Saints.
Oops, that's yours.
They are going to the Super Bowl.
Oh,
9-1. I'm so excited. I know we have to get past Atlanta.
No, you don't.
No.
Yeah, well, Thursday night. I mean, it's a rivalry.
For a big picture, it's
personal.
It's not Atlanta going to be here.
You got to watch tonight's game is the one that determines.
Exactly. I know.
Yeah,
exactly. I know.
But no,
that's the team you have to beat.
I don't think there's anybody playing better ball than the Saints right now.
They got an offense and a defense. It's I remember fantastic. Back in the day when I had to wear a paper bag
over
my
Aints.
Head.
Sure, the Aints.
Sure. And my dad gave me 25 cents a game.
<That's>
so
fantastic.
my red beans are done, my rice, I just need some meat, some chicken, or some ribs. I'm happy.
Good. We're so glad you're here.
Yes. That is
they're great. Going to have a very, very, very successful season.
That kid Breeze, I think he's going to feature in this
league. He might
be okay.
He's okay.
He might stick.
You know,
I have some staying power.
At a time when the city was really down on its knees, praying.
Sure.
Just waiting to get back on our feet. Drew Brees gave us the long pass.
And he stayed.
And look, the team is doing well.
This is something we talk about a lot on Tony Kornheiser. Okay, I talk about it a lot, which is Carol, the lovely Carol Kornheiser, is bringing Donna a drink.
Thank you, Carol. Carol Kornheiser.
That's Carol.
I love Tony. Thank you.
You know, you can.
We love Carol more.
Exactly. You can pull up a chair if you want.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good.
Isn't it?
Let me tell you, what was Jesus' first miracle?
Turning water into wine.
He listened to his mother and got the party started.
I don't normally do this, but
here you go.
Keep
the party going.
I've been a woman of faith ever since. The moment when I heard that in church, I said, I think I'll come back next Sunday.
That's outstanding.
Excellent.
I love to go to those 8:30 services, and at 9 o'clock you're ready to go get a mimosa.
Right. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we are talking.
Amen. We are thrilled you're here.
Thank you. We know you're
so busy, and we know you're going to head to New Orleans for Thanksgiving, right? But we're thrilled you're here. There's so many things we would love to talk about. We want to talk about your book, Hacks.
Oh, yeah.
The break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump into the White House. And I have to tell you, I sent a copy of this to my 97. Oh, he's about to be 97. He's only 96. Mm-hmm. My 97-year-old dad, who reads like a maniac, as Lori knows.
Wow.
And he read it, and he said, which I thought when I read, I listened to it, which is spectacular. Yeah. God bless you for doing the book. He said, you don't have to care about politics to appreciate this book. Mm-hmm. And he said, which is true, the level and depth and breadth of Russian hacking in every aspect of our lives the developed world, the world at large, is so significant. That came home to him.
That's right.
That is, it's a tremendous public service. Tremendous public service.
You know, Tori, you've known me for a long time.
Way too long.
Back in the day when there was a bus carrying the women reporters and the women strategists and campaign people, we filled probably just a quarter of the bus. Today, I think we would probably, Laura, you would agree, we would probably fill up half the bus, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've come a long way. But 2016 was a very different campaign environment. It was disruptive on both sides.
Yeah.
We had an outsider on the left and an outsider, you know, well, I don't know. I still don't know if Trump is left, right, middle.
He doesn't know, nor does he care.
Right, right. But we had two disruptive candidates, disruptive in the sense that the establishment, the status quo was being challenged. Mm. Now, on the Democratic side, we've experienced this before in 2008 with Barack Obama. But Barack Obama soon became a party inside and a party leader. Bernie Sanders sort of stayed outside. But on the right, Trump. Trump became this figure that seemed to not pay attention to the rules or respect them. And when I found out...
She's so polite.
Well, I'm first before I become a partisan. I'm an American. I love my country more than I mean, I love being a Democrat. I'm a bona fide, certified, right now, very poor Democrat. We had so many people running.
Right.
I mean, if someone asked me for another $5 contribution, I'm going to scream. $5 lure you in, and then they really want 50.
Of course.
But, you know, here I was becoming chair of the party for the second time in my adult life. How many people serve once, but twice?
Right.
And you know what they say, Donna, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice.
Well, yeah.
Shame on me.
And on that note, let me just sip another glass of wine because I'm just getting started here. Let me tell you. So here, I go through this experience. I knew the DNC had been hacked. I had no extent, no knowledge of the hacking.
Can I just give you a little context and just let you rip?
And let her drink some more.
Let her drink some more. What?
I have Irish coffee. It needs to be heated up.
Well, you know. You keep sipping
what
that.
What really struck me, and I have known you for a really, really long time. You and I have spent a lot of time in green rooms and makeup rooms. And you are an amazing person in so many ways. You're a terrific human being. You love your family.
Love them.
One of nine children. Born and raised in Louisiana. What is it about Louisiana water that produces so many incredible people? One of the things I know about you is you are not a technology genius.
No.
And technology deviled you in this campaign in two ways. One, again, the depth and breadth of the Russian hacking, and you learned things about technology, which never occurred to me I'd ever have to learn. And secondly, one of the real points of friction between you and the Hillary campaign. And there often is friction, Lori knows this, between the party apparatus and the presidential campaign. But one of the points of friction was they had all the data in the world, but they didn't pay attention to boots on the ground. They didn't drive around Michigan the way you did. They didn't go to North Carolina, those kinds of things. So technology played a role in your life in this job that had never played before.
I'm one of those old-fashioned politicians. I like to be hands-on. I actually like to get into I spent the last week of this election cycle in Newark, okay? Mm-hmm. Trenton and then Newark.
God bless you.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely.
Lovely. I mean, I felt like I was 24 all over again. I can't believe I have some. I can still, you know, walk around and knock on doors. But, no, the Clinton campaign were overconfident. They actually saw the public polls and believed that they had a path to 270 plus some change. Yeah. And what happened was they forgot to advertise and forgot to spend time in those three crucial states, those Rust Belt states. And Donald Trump just picked a lot. The door was open. Yeah. He just picked the lock and got more votes, 78,000 more votes in those three states. And guess what? He ends up president. But throughout this period of time, while the DNC was being hacked, while we were playing defense, no one came to our offense. No one came to protect us. No one came to pull us out of this quagmire. Just imagine, and Tori, you've worked in the government like me. Just imagine you get a call from the FBI, you get a call from all these federal agents and say, come in, we got to tell you some news. And when they told me this news, I signed a non-disclosure and I couldn't go out there and tell the world.
Lori and I were talking about this before the show started. I read the book and I listened to it. And again, God bless anybody, David. You'll have to do this because your voice is good. You read your own book, and that in and of itself is a ton of work. But the level of awe, and I don't mean in a good way, when they gave you that briefing, highly classified briefing, you were stunned by what they told you.
I wanted to go directly. I wanted to leave the FBI and go over to the Pentagon. I'm like, I can't fight the Russians. Right. The Russian military intelligence unit. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I live in D.C. I can barely own a knife, let alone a gun. And by the way, I know how to shoot. I'm a Second Amendment person. I know how to shoot, but I haven't shot anything since my teenage years. And let's just say, being from Louisiana, my mother used to say, when you go to the zoo, don't look at the species, think about the recipe. So, you know, I've had my time hunting. But this was an opportunity that I'm like, the country needs to know we're under attack. And yet we could not discuss it. It was beyond words.
I think to this day, and this is what struck me about what my dad said, is that to this day, people hear Russian hacking, and they go, oh, political, right? And their ears close off. Remember, the Russians, for as long as there have been Russians, have been trying to, they've been really good at sowing disinformation, screwing things up, sowing dissent in other places, trying to cause trouble for people they oppose, right? Now they're empowered by the internet with technology, and they're really good at it. I hated that, and again, the way you use their words, it's so sophisticated, it's so dangerous, it's so bad. But these things like Cozy Bear.
Fancy Bear.
But the other point that Donna made in the book, which I thought...
Which is called Hacks. We want people to read it.
Thank you.
The inside story of the break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump in the White House.
What was so interesting to me in thinking about it, it's like we think about, they hacked us. Like, it's one and done.
Right, right.
And your point in the book was like, oh, my God, this is so pervasive and so ongoing, and it's not stopping.
No. And, you know, when I heard the president at the time, President Obama, say, when the election was over, that he had confronted Putin and told him to stop it. And I screamed at the TV. I said, he didn't stop it. They kept going after us until 10/27.
Right.
10/27. 10/26... We had a meeting with the Hacker House. I was able, along with a lot of help, to get people who were very experienced at preventing hacking and hacking.
Right.
And I said, we need a group of Americans who could help us at a time when we're being hacked.
Who gave up jobs.
Very comfortable,
marriages,
expensive jobs to come and live in a slop house.
Right.
Here in D.C., it was a slop house because it was already sloppy before the boys moved in. Then it became a real slop house.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
It was famous. let's just say when they left, it took 3 or 4 days to get it cleaned out, but the usual campaign stuff. But these guys were able to put up our first line of defense to stop the hacking. Throughout this entire time, Tori, I think you'll like this. Not only did we stay in touch with the federal government to give them more evidence than they probably needed, I stayed in touch, and of course the Clinton campaign and all of the other different campaigns, but I stayed in touch with the RNC. I thought it was important that we not allow both political parties to be hacked and taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Because as Americans, we maintain the voter rolls. We maintain the voter list. And yes, Tori, while you're not a registered Democrat, we maintain your records of when you vote. If you vote in primaries, if you vote in general election.
The way things are going, I might soon be. So just saying.
But and I wanted the RNC to, one, know what was out there, know the vulnerabilities on their side, and also work with them to say, look, if we get shut out, we might have to come and visit you to get your information so that we can rebuild our voter file.
They didn't return those phone calls, did they, Don?
Sean Spicer did initially, Rince Priebus, because I needed him to go with me to meet with Homeland Security. He was a former chair to RNC, former chief of staff to the White House. He did not. On 10/17, I went by myself along with some of my colleagues from the Clinton campaign and the DNC. He went separately later, but I kept in touch with them the entire time.
You tried. Yeah. One of the things that it's hard to, Lori can speak to this because you know, she's worked on countless campaigns as well. But people think, oh my gosh, the head of the DNC, big strategist on campaigns, they're spending big chunks of their day working on strategy and doing this. You spent countless hours every single day managing the hacking, managing trying the defenses, and that doesn't give you time to work on what really needed to be done in that 2016 campaign, mm-hmm. which is go, oh my God, things are going bad in Michigan. We need to fix things in Michigan.
Well,
you spend a big chunk of time.
I could not convince the Clinton campaign until it was over, that the hacking was having an impact on our ability to message and communicate with voters.
Right.
Here was one thing that I think you all are like. Now, if you notice, I'm black.
No, I didn't notice that.
I
wasn't aware of
and
that.
I mentioned
this. Why we put you next to David, because then maybe people would catch on.
They're double Negroes.
Yeah, you know. Well, color. You know, that's my new book, The Color Girls.
The restaurant might explode.
No, it won't. Hell, they got some for all of us on the menu. But here I was trying to convince the Clinton campaign that the data that we might be using may not be sufficient. And I was getting calls in these bots. I didn't know they were bots at the time, and trolls, saying, oh, well, Hillary Clinton call black people super predators. I say, huh? I say, Hillary was not president. Mm. Are you sure it was Hillary? And I kept saying, this is not Black Lives Matter.
Right.
These are not black people.
These are not black people.
I mean, you often know what black people sound like and look like.
Yep.
And yet, we learned later through the social media campaign that was going on through Facebook that they were from Australia. They were pretending to be black. Mm-hmm. It just made me mad. I'm like, who pretends to be black? Well,
good day. I want to talk to you a little bit about your president.
All right. Well, hell, if y'all want to go dancing later, I will teach you how to pretend. But it doesn't mean that. But this was part of the disinformation campaign.
Right. Yeah.
And it was relentless. The part that really scared me, and I'll say this publicly now for the first time, was the ongoing threats that we received. We were just staff people. Hell, I mean, I was not a staff. I wasn't even paid, by the
way. You're a pencil and pen girl.
Mm-hmm. I am. I mean, and I got some of
my. You barely knew how to use your phone.
Well, Al Gore invented the internet, but I must have been sleeping on the campaign. I mean, because I'm like, how did that work? But here we were sitting there every day, and our information would just get garbled. And you couldn't defend yourself because by June of 2016, before they started publicly releasing our emails, we had to destroy our server system so that all of our emails, so you couldn't have a backup to like, well, is this mine or is this yours or who put this here or why is this?
No trail, no paper
and
trail.
And for me, it was personally painful because I was being accused of doing things that I never done in my life. Mm. At least John Podesta was accused of, you know, giving out his risotto recipe.
Oh, my God.
But that's nice, although we did have Pizzagate and some other stuff that come out of it.
Right.
But for me, they accused me of giving Hillary questions about the Flint water crisis when I had organized to get CNN to host a Flint debate.
Right, yeah. Right.
So how could I be doing something disingenuous? Right. But for me, it was more than what I call personal. It was an attack on my country.
Yeah, but what about your personal safety, Donna? That's something you touched on in the book, but wasn't there had to, that person, that friend of Elaine Kmart's, really warned you about your own personal safety. Were you ever concerned about that?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, which is why it took me a long time to get here because there are certain streets I don't ride on. It was too dark. I was worried. I had suspicious packages sent to my house. I had suspicious packages sent to the DNC. And again, we could not tell anybody because the FBI would come and collect the information. Or, you know, we had our offices swept for bugs and other illegal listening devices. I had to have my home swept. I had to put up two different type of security system, an external, internal security system. And, you know, just...
Friends and relatives had to look out for you and watch your house?
Oh, my God. And I also brought my dog over to my friend's house because they threatened
my
dog.
We cannot
threaten your dog?
No, we cannot go down the chip path.
Oh, my God.
We cannot go down the chip path on air. I'm sorry.
I'm having a hard...
No, stop.
You know, every holiday...
It doesn't end well.
My doggy, my boy, Chippity Chippity Gum Drop. Chip was a cross between George Clooney and Luther Vandross. He looked like George.
In fur.
In fur.
And sound
well,
like
George
Luther?
Has a lot of fur, too, but I'm not going any further than that. It's like that Burt Reynolds centerfold that I must have seen in Cosmopolitan when I was in college. I'll never forget what he looked like, trust me. When the man died, I said, oh, my God, why am I still thinking about Burt Reynolds, that poster? But Chip had this amazing way about himself. He was a man who came back as a dog because probably in his previous life he acted like
right, one. Yeah, he was.
But, left the seat up and everything.
Yeah, that's Chip, right? I mean, Chip was the kind of dog that after he did his business, he looked back at me like, pick up my stuff. I'm like, what? And when I fed him at night, I had to shut up and turn off the TV. And there was a certain hour of the night at 9 p.m., I'm not going to tell you who's on. If Chip didn't like me turning that channel, he would bark until I turned the channel off. So they told me my dog was also being threatened. I said, well, who would threaten a damn Pomeranian? My dog is dead. And when I took him to the vet right after the election, and I said, I went and finally got my dog when I no longer was at the DNC, they asked if my dog had access to quote-unquote rat poison. I said, Chip would not eat a steak on the ground unless I picked it up, cleaned it, cooked it to his perfection, cut it up, and put it on a plate.
Exactly.
Hell no, my dog didn't eat a damn.
Are you kidding
me? Yeah, my dog.
Okay, I read the book. I listened to the book.
My dog.
Lori's crying now.
I'm enraged. I'm beyond outraged.
I vowed to
that's unbelievable.
Everyone, we were not going to go down this path. That's just.
I love Boo Boo Boo. I miss Chippity Chippity Gum Drive. Chip Chip. Do you know for holidays, Chip knew it was the holidays, and he waited for me to put up the tree so that he can come and sniff around and see if I had his, you know what.
His stuff.
And every year, Chip had a box.
Yeah.
But he knew what was in the box was treats, a ball, and a squeaky toy.
Exactly.
And if I didn't put that for Chip, Chip would look under that tree and say, I will pee at under this tree and wet it.
Every day until I get there.
And by the way,
there'll be a lake in the middle of your house.
I have 14 years of me and Chip and Santa. Oh, yeah.
Okay, we need to go from the sad. Lori's hyperventilating. No, Lori, do you want to ask about Dolores?
Oh, my God.
So,
let
Donna.
Let me take another sip of wine on that one.
Yeah.
Ooh, Donna, wait. I have to tell you, I told Tori when I walked in, I said, I've seen Dolores.
Well, you know you have.
But yes, I didn't know she had a name. So you have to, I didn't, but I have seen her.
Dolores.
Always just a viewer.
You were never on the receiving end.
I was never
Dolores.
On the receiving end.
But she would never be the type on the receiving end.
No, of course not.
Because you're not one. You're not close-minded, okay? And you're not a total you-know-what.
Right.
But in 2016, I thought Dolores had died and passed on. Let's just say Robin Mook and the clerk brought Dolores out on a regular basis. Dolores is this my outer ego, my inner child that says, do not cross this line.
Yeah.
And if you cross this line, I'm not being nice anymore. Mm-hmm. That civility is gone. Dolores is, everyone has a Dolores.
Everybody
I
does.
I mean, see, Sapphire. Sapphire is, I'll set you on fire. Dolores is, I'm going to knock you down.
Mm-hmm. Out.
Everybody and I don't. And she don't play.
No.
But you know, the interesting thing is that she came out because I dealt with so many knuckleheads. Here I was, the chair of the party. I've been a campaign manager. I've been a strategist.
Mm-hmm. You had some street cred.
Not only did I have street cred, that's probably outside of cooking and gardening. It's like one of the things I think God gave me a gift. I love every 2 years I got to get my fix,
yeah.
Right? And these guys will look at me like, roll their eyes like, I'm like, they need material in Pennsylvania. Ed Rendell is calling me. I'm not making this up.
Right.
Oh, no, Madam Chair, we're okay in Pennsylvania. I'm like, how you know we're okay? They don't have early voting. What are your measurements?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that kind of talking that I had to deal with every day. And I felt like they were just being totally sexist.
I am they will write so many books about 2016. What I never have understood about the Clinton campaign is that you already got to do this once.
True.
And you got your doors blown off once.
True.
You would think, if you are lucky enough to get another crack at this thing, you would figure out, okay, what did we do wrong the first time so that that doesn't happen again to us a second time? Because there's not going to be a third time.
May I?
Go ahead.
Go.
Go, Lori, go.
So I remember the first time, 2008, I was working for Hillary then. Maggie Williams, who we know, yes. Political strategist, worked for Hillary for years, said to me one day, we're in the campaign headquarters before Iowa, and she said, we're running a campaign. She was talking about Obama.
Mm-hmm.
We're running a campaign. He's running a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So in 2016, no, not 16, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This time, again, so it was, again, it was all technical.
Right.
No heart. Mm-hmm. Which
no
you,
heart.
You so mm-hmm. aptly suggested in Hacks.
Yeah.
That there was no focus and no heart. Like, you're looking at numbers, which is important. Those analytics are great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But
to point you in a direction.
Yeah, but your numbers were wrong.
Yeah.
People are telling you this thing's slipping away in these states. You got to get.
What Donna said is what's right. The passion. You couldn't. Yeah. So you could say, like, we have these voters, and you knew, well, if it's raining, they're not going to come.
That's
or
right.
If their neighbor invites mm-hmm. them for coffee, they're not going to come.
Right.
And or if the polls don't open at 7 right. because they got to vote before they go to work
right.
and
right.
they're not open.
They're not going to go right. afterwards,
they,
yeah.
They can't come back.
It is. It's all on a human level, and it feels like they completely ignored that. You know?
Right. They were very, first of all, they were very competent. This was not a case of incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
But they over-relied on data. Now, go back to our initial premise. The DNC, the Democratic National Committee, is being hacked.
Yeah.
The first thing that the Russians went after was the intelligence that we had gathered on Donald Trump. Then they started going after individual states, which we now know correspond to the Russians. I guess they tried to hack into state election systems yeah. and voter registration systems.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very methodical campaign
sure.
on their part.
Right.
And so rather than a Clinton campaign understand that we're in a different environment and perhaps look to other countries that dealt with similar things, similar activities, they just kept on their quote-unquote their path.
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Well, we know the three people in this precinct are going to vote for Hillary, but what about the fourth and the fifth? I used to walk into the room and say, I know I look black, and I am, but I'm also Irish.
Yeah.
Are you talking what? To any Irish people?
Right.
No. I mean, there are a lot of Irish people out there that you're not talking to. And you know what I used to always argue? I said, look, I'm a black woman, and we know that if you reach a black woman one time, she is going to solidify her support for you, and
mm-hmm.
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But for white women, there are 16 different varieties of white women. I've never understood that.
Depending on the time of day, for God's sake.
Well, suburban, urban, married, religious, educated, non-educated.
Right.
I mean, 16 different varieties, and you don't play with that. They're swing voters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say, who's talking to them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is part of the problem. And Lori and I have talked about this. When I was watching the 2016 campaign unfold, I said, oh, my God, the similarities to the Bush-Quayle sad reelect effort in 92. So similar. We know what we're doing. We've done this before. We got it. We got the numbers, these kinds of things.
Right.
They didn't get out of the flipping offices and spend time on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, for not political reasons, I was in Michigan. I was driving back and forth across Pennsylvania. I'm going, where's the enthusiasm?
Yeah.
Where's the we care about these kinds of things? We were in Michigan to see our son, Charlie, the Sunday before Election Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And President Obama was coming to campaign. You wouldn't have even known. People are like, whatever,
yeah.
that kind of thing. Our little neighborhood right up the street, which is like to the left of Castro,
yeah.
which is usually just covered with yard signs. I know yard signs aren't scientific, but as Lori knows,
it's an indicator.
Nothing. There was just lack of
news. You know,
but these people, like Robbie Mook, and I've met Robbie, seems like a lovely guy. They didn't get out of their offices. They didn't go on the ground and go, okay, we're going to match what's happening boots on the ground with this great data we have. They never did.
But Donna wasn't the only one telling them that.
Bill Clinton was.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's my favorite
story.
But now,
was there a certain part of like, okay, that was your guys back in the day, but we have it now? Was there that kind of dynamic tension?
You know, back in the day, I've always believed that you have a no-excuse policy. You call up all of the key states,
right,
and you call up those. I'll give you a good example. In June of 2000, I told the Gore campaign, I said, we're going to lose Tennessee. And they looked at me like I was stupid. Mm. I said, and Bob Schrum and all of my colleagues, Kardescu, Tony, Quello, everybody looked at me, well, how do you know I'm campaign manager? I was living in Tennessee.
Mm.
Now, I'm one of these women that go to the grocery store. I do my own shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm a Walmart shopper, too, especially when you're down south. Because Walmart
have
certain
they
things.
They own everything.
They have certain things that you can't get nowhere else, right? Mm. And so I had the Walmart test and the shopping test. Mm-hmm. And that is, you wear a button into a shopping center or a place where people are at, and you notice who come up to you and say, where did you get the button?
Mm-hmm.
No one asked me a damn thing about a button. Mm-hmm. I'm like,
right.
Ooh, Gore got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally I started doing my own focus group. And I said, are you going to vote for Vice President Gore? No, he never comes home.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he comes home, he gets a helicopter and he flies to his farm and he never stops and say hello to us.
Mm-hmm. Lori, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so with Hillary Clinton, while she had a lot of support out there, in order to get a bumper sticker or a quote unquote your sign, you had to pay $25.
No,
who the hell gonna pay $25 for a button and a bumper sticker and a
yard
sign? That's a lot of money.
Sure it is.
But
it's
also imbued with a sense of entitlement. Okay, here's what sounds like a really dumb question, but it's not as dumb as it sounds.
Okay,
which is a lot of us, yourself, you know, myself included, got caught up in the really very real important historical significance of Barack Obama being elected.
Yes.
Like we could set aside his lack of experience.
Yeah.
We could set aside, you know, lots of things, whether we agreed or disagreed with him on policies, but thought, okay, this is an important moment in this country's history.
Yes.
I want to be a part of this, right?
Yes.
A lot of people did.
Sure.
Is it a good sign or not a good sign we were not similarly caught up in the historical significance of a woman being elected president?
I think in 2008 will always be the most historic year we've seen before 2016. That year we had a woman who ran for president and almost made it.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary lost by the number of superdelegates that switched at the last minute.
Right.
And then we had Sarah Palin. Remember her?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the second time we've had a woman on a presidential
see
ticket.
From my house.
That's right, and I hope she can. You know, I had a chance to see her a couple of weeks ago, and let me just say, God bless her.
Yeah, exactly.
Bless her heart.
Bless your heart.
Bless our heart. But I had fun with her. You know, let's just say we had fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to send her a note before the end of the day and wish her and her family a happy Thanksgiving.
God bless you.
She's been through some tough times.
Yeah,
personally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
but we came very close. And I always believed that we would have the first female president before the first African-American black president.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And
yes,
oh,
sure.
I did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
women
course.
Are majority of voters.
Oh, yeah.
Hillary Clinton, I mean, she had a lock.
Mm-hmm.
She had a lock on the nomination mm-hmm. in 2008. But Barack Obama was the outsider.
Right.
But you know the interesting thing? It was Hillary Clinton who introduced Barack Obama to a lot of us nationally. And Mignon Moore and several of my other friends, we call ourselves the Color Girls, we organized to get him as the keynote speaker. And then 2 years later, he ran against Hillary after he won.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. But look, I think after the midterm of 2018, that will go down as the second year of the woman. This is the year of the woman outsider.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that America is ready to elect its first female president. And on the Democratic side, I think in 2020 we might see at least 3, if not 4, viable women compete for the presidency.
Which one's going to do best?
I don't know. I'm still a member of the DNC, and so therefore I can't tip
They're
my
all great candidates.
I can't tip my hat, but I can tell you with Amy Klobuchar Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Elizabeth Warren, and who knows, it might be another person out
right.
there.
Yeah. Yeah. That we haven't thought about.
We're going to have the most diverse group of candidates ever in the history of American politics. We're going to have an adult table, a children table, and a pre-K table.
I want to go
back. All three tables this time.
I want to go back to something you touched on at the very start when you said you're Democrat, but above that, you're an American.
I am.
I think we all, I think reasonable thinking people, we all share that sentiment that we're Americans and we're proud of that. But we're living in a time right now, after everything that went on in 2016, 2018, where it feels like we're more divided than we ever have been, where the partisan politics is driving us farther and farther apart. Do we get back to a point, do you think,
where it's like there's it's like, you know, we're all in this together, and let's build something together as opposed to tearing each other down.
Well, first of all, I pray that we don't have a national tragedy that brings us together.
Yeah.
What should bring us together is our values. I can't, it's very difficult for me to spend this week, a week where we thank our family and our friends, and we have appeared to say thank you, the gratitude. I am so grateful for the men and women who serve our country. They won't be able to get home this weekend. How do we pay tribute to them? So I do believe that as a country, we have all of the right ingredients to come back. What's tearing us apart is the news and the information and how it's being delivered. We feel like we have enemies on both sides of our so-called playground or neighborhood. We don't. We have so much in common. I was raking my leaves yesterday because, you know, that's what you have to do. The president said we got to rake to prevent the fire. And I had more than
Finland
enough.
Finland has something to say about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been to Finland twice. And I was sitting outside. I said, well, let me rake my leaves. And I noticed that my neighbors were coming out. I have my neighbors, my neighborhood, like the United Nations, we were all raking, and I went out and got a little bit more wine, and before you know it, we're all ready. And we didn't talk politics, we just said we got to rake up.
I think most people don't, right?
We had to rake up in case there's a fire. We wanted to rake up. I mean, you see, the president's bringing us together. So let's not always blame this on Trump. The dynamic started pre-Trump.
Yeah.
They will exist post-Trump. You know, the interesting thing is that
you've talked about him being a symptom.
Oh, he's a symptom.
Right, a symptom rather than a cause.
Yeah. Look, we have the dynamics of our country is that there's still millions of Americans who believe that we're on the wrong track. The economy is better, consumer confidence is up, and yet people are dissatisfied. Yeah. There's a level of anxiety that I think comes from the political world, but it's somewhere it exists because people are still uncomfortable. In terms of where we are with the rapid changes, the technology, and the globalization, we're still trying to get caught up on what's happening in the world. And I think that's what's driving our divisions. It's fear.
Well, everybody's one paycheck away from oblivion.
Or two.
Well, maybe two.
Yeah, maybe
but
two.
Not many, not more than that. And that's most people. And I still think economic anxiety drives all.
Right.
A lot of it.
Vast majority.
They feel the effects of the globalization of the economy, but they don't really know how to articulate it, and they don't know what to do
about
it.
And everything is on an app. Everything is on an app. And I'm like, I am shocked by the level. You got to have some knowledge.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I have to spend like a day a month dealing with my app issue because they don't talk to each other. And this morning I was in the cloud and I'm like, well, hell.
When Tim Cook of Apple says he's working hard to put his phone down and not reach for his phone and not check everything out and not do all these apps all day, that tells you something.
Yeah.
Somebody that steeped in it who understands it that much understands it's not that great
just
an environment
walk down
to be
the
in
street.
Every single day.
You walk down the street and nobody's looking anybody in the eye.
No. Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their heads down in their phone. Yeah. I'm guilty
of
that too.
You know, the worst is when you're driving and somebody is on a bicycle and they got something in their ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, sister, I have to communicate with you because you're getting out of getting my lane.
Right, exactly.
And we're all caught up in these apps. I want an app called Slow Down.
Sure. I'd back that.
Slow Down.
Like, stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, like get your fireplace going, get some flowers. Yeah. And like I did the other night, I was, you know, I'm peeling my shrimp. I'm getting ready to make a good gumbo.
Okay, so we need to start wrapping things up here because Mark has to go off
and
see a movie.
We're good. No, this is more important than any movie.
But tell us about Thanksgiving. I know it involves family because that's everything in your life. So tell us about Thanksgiving. What will you be cooking, and will the gumbo, of course, have a roux? R-O-U-X.
R-O-U-X, of course. I've already got my shrimp from the wharf here in D.C., and I have my crabs. So the shrimp I'm using this year for my D.C. friends are from the Carolinas. They have the heads on them. The reason why you want shrimp with the heads on is because you want to use that for a stock.
Okay.
The stock is very important.
Okay.
And then I have my fresh crabs and my fresh oysters. So it's going to be a seafood gumbo.
Nice.
But I'm going to also have okra. Mm. So the thickness comes from not just the roux, but the thickness also comes from the okra. The good thing about okra is if there's anything in your intestines that need to come out,
Book will take care of it.
This is colonoscopy 101. Let's just say that.
So good and good for you.
Yeah, that's good for you. Is that's that, number one.
Excellent. Is that why my when I went into the hospital, they gave it was.
It's okra.
It smelled like okra.
Yeah. Let me tell you, it is the best thing. Now, if that don't get you healthy,
right.
And because you're still waiting to get your flu shot,
right.
Well, then my dirty rice,
mm-hmm.
this dirty rice is dirty,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't look for nothing clean in it, all right? It is, this is how you're going to get sobered up before mm-hmm. you even start drinking.
There you go.
Have a little dirty rice. And then my cornbread dressing is going to be crawfish cornbread dressing. The good news is that Jiffy cornbread is 59 cents. It used to be $3 for $1, 59 cents. I checked that out the other day.
Inflation.
Yeah, but you know what? You can do anything with Jiffy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should have Jiffy in their pantry because on bad days, if you got some leftover berries,
you don't know how to use it though.
You can make blueberry pancakes with Jiffy. Jiffy is some good stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I have.
And it's been in that same little small box for 1,000 years.
1,000 years.
God bless.
Yeah, I love some Jiffy.
Shelf life of 30 years.
I have some Jiffy. Although if it's over 2 years, you might want to get some Jiffy.
New Jiffy.
So I have my gumbo. And let me tell you, I started smothering some smoked turkey necks a couple of days ago because I'm making a combo.
Let's stop there. Smoked turkey necks.
Oh, yeah. Because you put that in a crock pot with some onions and a turnip bottom, and we make pot liquor, which is a little ketchup, a little pinch of sugar, and some vinegar, and you make the pot liquor. Because when you put your greens in, your mustard, your collards, mm-hmm. and of course kale, which used to be like a garnish, kale is now whatever.
Yeah, now you gotta eat it.
I'm gonna smother that with that.
I'm still ignoring
and so far, so good. Because you know, the turkey gonna be injected with a lot of Cajun sauce, and that girl, when her breast pop out, or that man, or whoever, I don't know. I ain't trying to look for somebody's sexual identity in my turkey, okay?
Exactly.
I'm so sorry somebody killed you, but I'm gonna eat you. Go back to my mama. If the species is about the recipe.
Yeah.
So I'm making a Cajun turkey, and she's gonna be good too.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of Thanksgiving is that you're with your family.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody's drinking. Mm-hmm. We're watching football.
Everybody's eating.
Everybody's eating. Nobody's doing anything else. And you know, I have a rule. But since the Saints playing, normally at 6 o'clock, you gotta get out of my house. I serve early.
Get out.
Because I get my mimosas going by 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I fix you a wonderful breakfast complete with grits and eggs and all that other stuff.
You feed them all day. And
normally
it's time
at
to
6
go.
O'clock because I have to take a nap.
Right.
Tori,
ain't got to go home. But
my niece, she married this guy in the army, and he came over. And I said, it was 6. I said, you got to go. I'll pack you a to-go plate. You got to go.
Yeah.
It is time because I have to get my sleep because you get up early in the morning and put your turkey in the oven.
Can take a nap,
I am one of the matriarchs left in my family that knows the old ways of cooking all of these things. Mm-hmm. And so stuffed bell pepper, stuffed melatons. I got so much. Mm-hmm. But my little niece, mm-hmm. she makes the stuffed eggs. I don't do any desserts. I never wanted to waste my talent on sweet things.
That's so easy. Ton of sugar. See, but this makes me think of the next podcast, Mark. So we're going to have chatter on wine. We could have chatter on cooking.
Yes.
And we can do it back in the kitchen.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Donna could cook back in the kitchen, do the podcast as we're cooking.
I bet.
How great would that be?
I just want to say, you guys know me. I don't eat seafood. It's like one of my greatest flaws.
Right.
And I want some of what you're cooking.
Massachusetts, for God's
I know. It's a great fatal flaw for me. I know. It's you can shun me now.
By the way, there are four seasons in Louisiana. Shrimp, crab, crawfish, and oysters. and what you don't eat, baby, you can come for the Mardi Gras, you can drink.
Right. But no, what you're cooking sounds so unbelievably delicious.
Mm.
I love that.
You're tempted, aren't you?
I am tempted.
There we go.
Let's give it a shot.
We got to wrap this up, so we got to give a Thanksgiving gift to all of our listeners, all 12 of them. And this is we used to say this is, if you're going to the desert, the deserted island, you can only take one book with you. What's the one book you would take with you or recommend? But now, in the spirit of, we didn't do family dysfunction for Thanksgiving, but in the spirit of the holiday season,
right.
It can be a book you would take with you because it's the only book you can have, or it's a book somebody needs to run from because it's so terrible.
Mm.
Mark, would you like to go first?
Well, okay, sure. I will go first. I'm going to talk about a book that's actually based down in New Orleans.
Oh.
Won the Pulitzer Prize, I have to check this, in 1981, okay. Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh,
great book.
You know, he committed suicide before it was published. His mother, that was her life work to sort of get that book published. So if you haven't read it, go and read that
great
one.
Book.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great book.
Mm-hmm.
Lore?
So I didn't really, if I'm on a desert island, I want the dictionary.
because that'll keep me amused for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, my God, like you and my dad are the Encyclopedia Britannica. Yeah, he runs out of books to read, and he just starts reading through the Encyclopedia Britannica.
It would keep me
Dictionary would?
But can I give just another...
Don't tell me how it ends.
It would keep me amused.
Zizogy.
Damn it!
But can I recommend a book? Yeah, of course.
Of course.
So if you haven't read it,
are you recommending? Or is Ruby recommending?
Well, she's recommending, but I'm also recommending.
Okay, go.
Educated.
Okay.
Tara Westover's memoir of growing up in Idaho. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Hmm?
Okay.
All right.
DX. I didn't do it justice, maybe.
Well, I'm sure it's a very fine book.
Educated.
We're going to keep track.
Barack Obama liked it.
There you go. We're going to start doing on the website, which is in construction, chatteronbooks.com. We're going to start doing celebrity picks.
Yes.
Right? And see what goes up and what goes down.
Well, you said family. So I thought about a book I read a long time ago about a very dysfunctional family called The Hotel New Hampshire by John. That's a dysfunctional family.
Perhaps the mashed potatoes.
These are great books.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite books.
That is outstanding.
Okay. Donna? Yes.
Well, first of all, the Bible for me, because I think the Bible is for warriors. Bible is for warriors. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Lord is my light and salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Whom shall I be afraid? When my enemies come before me, they shall stumble and fall. Can you imagine if I'm on a desert? I want to read the Bible because I know how that ends. But if I'm not on a desert, I'm on a beach with something with a straw in it. I want anything by David Baldacci or John Grisham, because that's light on the head, but it's good.
Yeah.
And I want to say, Tori, for your dad, this is my latest book with three other women, and I got book.
You have to sign it for him.
I'm going to sign for your dad for the color girls who consider politics.
This is a great trilogy, and because I'm running out of ideas for my dad's 97th birthday, which is coming up, because
when is his birthday?
December 3rd.
My birthday is December 15th, so that's an early birthday present.
But if you want to know Donna the person, you read Cooking with Grease.
Absolutely.
Right? If you want to know Donna the citizen, you read Hacks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then this one, for color girls who have considered politics, my dad will love this. You have to sign two books for me tonight.
I'm ready.
I can't top that, so I'm not going to do one.
Oh, no, you got to give one. Got to give one. Come on.
Simon the Sea Cat.
Thank you.
Soon to be a major motion picture.
Yes. Available
on Kindle right now on Amazon.
And I am getting every dollar that is spent on the plush toy that we're going to do.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
I wrote a kid's book called Simon the Sea Cat.
Spectacular.
Just out this
based
week.
On a true story.
I got to get you a copy.
I love that. Thank you.
All right, Mark, get us out of here, honey.
Listen, everybody, thank you for coming. We tape every Monday. We get here at about 5. Come in early. Come in about 3.
We start drinking at about 4, but you can come whenever you want.
Yeah.
Do we know what...
Yes. Next week we have Sarah Pekkanen. Monday. She is a real deal. She's a recovering journalist, but she is a real deal author of many, 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 many bestsellers, including The Wife Between Us, which is her most recent one. She's got one coming out next year, Anonymous, which always has great buzz. She happens to be a local girl. She happens to be from around here. But she writes real deal, great books. This one, The Wife Between Us, it's what... The Girl on the Train. It's what the Winter Girl wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Don't read Winter Train. I mean, Winter Girl. Don't read that. Very twisty, torture, whatever. It's fabulous. So she's a real deal author.
She'll be in with us.
She will be in with us.
That's next Monday.
And we're good. And she already came up with some great offers. And I said we'll buy, 15, 20 copies of the book. We've got a bunch of Donnas. We've given them to great people here.
And she goes,
I'll buy them free drinks, and I'll give them a signed copy of Anonymous, and we'll do dinner. So...
That's going to be like, so you'll want to be here. This is at Chatter on the Corner, Wisconsin, and Jennifer. Tony Kornheiser, thank you for letting us do our show.
God bless you, Tony.
Yes.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. Thank you guys for coming out.
Thank you.
Everyone listening, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Be with your friends. Be with your
family.
God bless. We'll see you next week.
God bless.